Hello, and welcome to Interview with an MVP. It's Crystal Kawula and my cohort here, Clint Wyckoff.
Partner in crime.
That's right. He took over my booth. My
I did.
Station.
I like to be in the con. I need to be in control at all times. I have issues with that, actually, Crystal.
He really does. He really,
something
really
that
does.
I take quite a bit of medication for,
Don't
unfortunately.
Don't try to take the keyboard away from Clint.
And there's
not
Dave
a good idea.
And it's
also
back to
joining us.
So this is, like I said, Interview with an MVP, and we're here to talk about storage. It's one of the number one areas in Hyper-V.
It's a huge, you need it for everything, and our demands for it are just growing and growing. It's not something that's ever going to really go away.
Right. Not only are the demands for capacity, but the demands for performance.
Speed.
As
absolutely.
Well. You know, and it's usually one of the most problematic areas in virtualized environments. So today we're going to be just talking about, you know, disk resizing of the virtual hard disk format, VHD, VHDX, as well as some proper capacity planning techniques that folks can leverage in their environment.
Planning being the key word there.
Yes,
planning.
Absolutely. Planning is hugely important. And with me today, I'm being joined by, you know, Dave Kawula.
Nice fade in. Very nice.
As well as Alan Rafuse.
Hello there.
Say hello to the camera there, Alan.
It's right there.
So, you know, Dave, in your opinion, you know, what are the different techniques that folks can take advantage of when they really look at Hyper-V storage?
Well, I think that's a really good question, Clint. And I think, you know, you have to look at what type of storage you're going to have in your environment. So for a lot of small firms that are out there and, you know, small businesses, they actually don't even need shared storage to run Hyper-V. They can actually run it on their, you know, locally attached drives that they've got, their direct attached storage. And I know a lot of organizations that will do that. You can actually get some high availability built in with the local attached storage by doing shared nothing live migration. But then we can also have configurations where we're connecting to iSCSI, Fibre Channel, and now with Windows Server 2016, we can also move into a hyper-converged storage design with Storage Spaces Direct. But when we take a look at the way that Hyper-V stores its information on its virtual hard disks, that format type is called a VHDX format file. And what are some of the things that are important, Alan, for, you know, just the general day-to-day operational maintenance of those VHDX files? Like, can they fill up? Can they get too big? Can we have to, you know, delete them, manage them, maintain them? What are some of the things that we would have to go through and do on a daily basis with those?
Well, if you're transitioning over from being a traditional server admin or Hyper-V admin, you now have to become the network admin, and you also need to become the storage spaces guy. So with that, you need to think about what could you do before on your existing storage system. So you have these LUNs that you need to go ahead and resize. So in the virtual world, you have people that... Dave's having way too much fun here. So in the traditional world, you would have to go out and do capacity planning for that one system. Now, everything has to be on demand. You're trying to move quicker, move faster, for every department wants things now. So they might start up with 100 gigabytes. Great, no problem. Their capacity plans may need to change up to 250. So how do we do that? Virtualization, VHD files, we can go ahead and manage that. Couple clicks. PowerShell commands also, we can go ahead and do that.
Now this is something that's been possible for a long time on the VMware side of the fence, Alan, you know, so is this something that, you know, Microsoft is using as a differentiator, or like, you know, I mean, you're resizing virtual hard disks, you know, is that really like, you know, is that something that commonly happens in real world environments?
It is. People's demands change. People want space right now, or we need to redeploy this application, or we need to migrate. We may be trying to get rid of an old file server solution cluster, and we need to move it over into a virtual environment. There's many ways and reasons why we have to manage the storage. But on the other side, We can do other things such as convert the VHD files between different versions for mm-hmm. whatever uses that we're using. So there's many different options that Hyper-V gives us to control our storage.
How about migrating that storage? Let's say that we want to actually move to a new array. Let's say that the average life cycle, at least in my experience with storage, is between 4 to 5 years inside of an organization. So we go out, we drop our cache, we buy ourselves a new SAN or NAS right. appliance, whatever it is. That's going to last in our environment for 4 to 5 years, going to provide, you know, a good framework of storage and capacity that we have. But let's say that the decisions of the organizations change, and now we want to move on to a different platform. What are the technologies that are built into Windows Server and or Hyper-V that allow us to, you know, shift that data around without having to incur outages and penalties for that?
Well, sharing is usually caring, but in this case, we have a technology called shared nothing. So you're not actually sharing anything in common. So we can actually migrate that workload from one system to another system. As long as we have access to the data, we can pull it across in real time.
Yeah, and I think you drop about one ping when you go to do a live migration in Hyper-V, and you're going to see about the similar type drop when you go to migrate or shift its storage. So you're moving those VHDX files around. You're actually not going to take an outage. You can do it hot and live with the systems.
Well, the other thing that I've been talking about is we're increasing storage. So storage demands are going up or down. But when we're migrating machines across, we have a physical file system that we're using. We're storing data somewhere on some type of storage drive, if you will. But one of the things that people also want to do is change the number of virtual CPUs that they have, or memory consumption. So now we've just migrated a virtual machine over that has 32 gigs of RAM, which isn't much in this day and age, but again, if they say, now we need to up this to 128 gigs, and this server already has 256, how do we manage that on the physical file system? There's things that you need to be aware of when you're doing the migrations.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And we've got a great session that comes up that we're going to dive in some demos. I know that we're really big on going through a lot of demos and, you know, doing some, you know, whiteboarding and, you know, in these sessions, it's more me drawing with my mouse, but I call it whiteboarding. And so we've got some really good illustrations for exactly how this is going to work. So Crystal, Clint, do you guys think that we should dive into another demo-rich, action-packed session around this?
Absolutely.
All right, everyone. We are back for another session here for our Hyper-V and System Center operational training. This is going to be session number 5 that we're going through. And my name is Dave Kawula. I'm Microsoft MVP and also have some other industry MVPs like Veeam Vanguard. Cloud and Data Center Management MVP, that's my specialty. Really, I'm a Hyper-V guy. I've been a Hyper-V guy for about the last 8 or 9 years, and I'm very pleased to be joined once again by my esteemed colleague, Clint Wyckoff. Clint, do you want to just go through a real quick introduction? Maybe some of the viewers haven't watched the previous episode, so.
Yeah, hey everybody, my name is Clint Wyckoff. I too am a Microsoft MVP in the cloud and data center management space, as well as a VMware vExpert. I've been in the enterprise IT industry for, you know, 10 plus years. That's kind of where my background comes from, as an IT pro where I was a VMware administrator. So yeah, thanks Dave, it's great to be with you guys today.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Okay, so just really quick overview here. You guys can follow myself on Twitter at Dave Kawula. Make sure you do that. Lots of updates come. Clint and I typically will post anything new that we find to Twitter first as a medium of social media. You can follow Clint at Clint Wyckoff. Both him, himself, and myself are very active in social media all the time. Very easy to find us there, and we're very approachable. Okay, so today's session that we're going to be going through is going to really be an operational session, Clint. And this operational session that we're going to be going through is going to be covering anything that you have to do on a day-to-day basis with a virtual machine. So
I know that we had sliced out a bit of an agenda for this for virtual machine management. And so we're going to go through and cover the creation of a VM, deleting a VM just in its life cycle. And we're going to do this all with the native management tools. So no VM, no virtual machine manager added in yet. Remember, we like to teach the native core underlying pieces of infrastructure first before we add a management tier. Take a look at the file system. We'll work with manually moving virtual machine files. So let's say you had to manually move virtual machine files from one server to another. You know, what's the best process to go through and do that? We will take a look at migrating virtual machines. What are the options for live migration, shared nothing live migration, which is a really cool piece of functionality that Hyper-V has that I find is used by quite a few small to mid-sized businesses. Also very useful for transitioning between SAN vendors. Hot adding and adding VHDs, sending VHDs, and just basically taking a look at the raw construct of what really makes up a virtual machine. So as we get started, one of the big things that we have to take a look at here is the actual virtual hard disk format, because this could be slightly different for some of our administrators coming over from VMware, right, Clint? And so maybe if you could, as you're a VXpert and you have so much expertise in the VMware arena, would you be able to give me and the viewers that are listening, watching the video, a quick comparison between the hard disk format that we would see in VMware versus what we would see traditionally maybe in Microsoft? Were you able to do that for us?
Yeah, absolutely, Dave. No, they're very, believe it or not, they're very similar in the fact that they're, you know, they're virtual hard disks, they have configuration files. However, they're, you know, they're called different things. So in the VMware side of the fence, you have what's called a .vmdk, and that is the VMware format for a virtual hard disk, right? So a virtual machine can have one or many VMDKs associated with it. That's kind of the virtualized hard disk format for the vSphere infrastructure. Now on the Hyper-V side of the fence, depending on which version of Hyper-V you're running, so if you're running, say, for instance, you know, 2008 R2, 2012, you might have a .vhd format. One of the things that Microsoft has done is they've updated that format to a .vhdx file format. So if you're running Windows Server 2012 R2, you'll notice that the vhdx format is utilized. Now, there's differences between, you know, vhd, vhdx. Generally speaking, you know, you're going to see if you're running the latest iteration of Windows Server and Hyper-V that you're going to be using the .vhdx file format. And if you're running the legacy version, which is the VHD, there are ways to convert from VHD to VHDX. Very simple, via PowerShell.
Awesome, awesome. And so I think some of the highlights that I have for the comparisons of the VHD to the VHDX files, Clint, is the sheer size that you can have in a VHDX format file, going up to 64 terabytes in a single VHDX file. That's a big file.
That is huge. I mean, if you look at what it was previously, I think it was, what, 2 terabytes?
It was.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
With the VHD file format.
Yeah, and this actually presented a little bit of problems, depending on if you were going through some P to V, physical to virtual activities, had larger volumes, you know, you could actually run into some challenges where, you know, you're trying to convert and bring some of that infrastructure in line. They've improved some of the actual formats of the files. So we can see that, you know, through the block allocation tables and just the way that they're aligning the data regions inside, some of these pieces have been really greatly improved with the VHDX file format. And the big things are is that, you know, we want to take and protect against corruption during power failures, because, you know, power failures never happen in a data center, right, Clint? Like, everything is going to stay online all the time. Seeing as you work for a vendor that provides backup and replication solutions, this is kind of the thing that I think you preach on a daily basis, is you always kind of have to plan for the unexpected, right? And so that's a big one. You just never know when something bad's going to happen in your data center.
Yeah, so you definitely need to make sure that you're prepared there. And I think another item that's worth noting there as part of the virtual hard disk format is, you know, as organizations continue to virtualize larger and larger workloads, right, the VHD format had many limitations. The first one obviously being the file size there. So if I wanted to try to virtualize some massive SQL servers, it was challenging in the past, to say the least, right? You had to, you know, span multiple virtual hard disks. It wasn't really the best way to do things. So, you know, by updating to the latest version, you know, you get to take advantage of, you know, the capabilities. And one of those obviously being, as you noted there, Dave, was the 64 terabyte file limit.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the other really important pieces of the new virtual hard disk format, Clint, is it's really a universal format. So when we think of a virtual hard disk, most people think of a virtual hard disk as something that can only be used on a virtual machine, a guest VM, right? But did you know, Clint, that you know you can actually mount VHDX files with Disk Manager? So if you want to actually view and expand that, that's pretty cool, right? And the other thing you can do is you can actually boot a physical server using a VHDX format file. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think the new Microsoft Azure Stack Technical Preview 2 downloader, I'm just about to actually start playing with this here today in my lab environment. What you download from Microsoft is basically a 20 gig VHDX file as the core OS that you're going to run on your physical box. And it actually takes that VHDX and it mounts it. It's bootable. So you can actually have a bootable VHDX for your laptop or your servers. And I don't see a lot of people using that in production per se, but it is definitely possible. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of neat.
I mean, I know
it's a universal
some of the evals that you'll download off of the TechNet Eval Center for like Windows Server 2012, 2012 R2, even some of the System Center components mm-hmm. are downloaded in just a VHDX format.
Yeah,
so that you can port it straight into your Hyper-V environment, Dave.
Yeah, and I think that's probably a good natural segue here into the demo environment, Clint. So can you see my demo environment there?
Yeah, Dave, it looks crystal clear.
Perfect. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to open up Disk Management, and I just want to show everyone that, and this actually started, when did this start? Was it start with like Windows 7? I can't remember.
8.1.
Windows 8.1, that's right. And what you could do inside of here is you could actually take and you could add and attach a virtual disk. So see where it says that you can create a VHD or attach a VHD? So if I had a VHD that was living somewhere on my system, I could attach this VHDX file and I can actually mount it and I can view it and I can make changes. And then when I dismount it, it's this format is actually retained. So if I take this and I browse out here, I'm going to have a D drive on this box. I'm going to have some virtual machines that we have created. I don't know if it'll actually let me mount these. This may be a bad example. We're going to try.
Is any one of those powered off?
This one here is powered off, yeah. Actually, you know what? This demo environment that I have actually stores things in a little different structure. So we've got the VMs, and then the VHDs are actually down here. So this guy here is actually not turned on right now. So if I went ahead and I tried to open him, let's see if that'll
you
actually
even, if you were to navigate just through File Explorer, you can just double click on them as well. You don't have to go to Disk Manager to mount it.
Oh yeah, for sure. But it's kind of neat to actually see it inside of here. But yeah, good to know that you can actually just double click and the context will show up. So as we take and come through here, I can see my O drive. And I can see that this actual powered off Hyper-V virtual machine, which I think that was Hyper-V 04, correct? So that's this guy right here. I actually basically just cracked his virtual hard disk, this guy, HV Node 4 VHDX. So that's the one that I actually just cracked and opened up inside of my file system. Now, for obvious reasons, I'd have some problems if I went to go turn on this VM, right? Because I'd have a lock and it wouldn't be able to get into the file. So that wouldn't be very good. But it's neat that you can actually grab this. And that's a very important point, because what I want to relay to everybody that's watching this video is that VHDX files are no different than you having a hard drive in a physical server. So if I walk into your data center and I steal your hard drives out of your server, I'm going to be able to power them up in another system unencrypted. If they are unencrypted, I would be able to view the subsystem something like this, correct? There really is absolutely no difference. I would be able to go in here. I'd be able to copy files. And so this leads me to a very important point, folks, is that your physical data security, like your physical security of your Hyper-V host, is so important. We're going to talk about some new features in later videos about how to protect and secure this. But basically, if you can copy and paste, you can actually grab these files, move them around, and you can do stuff with them. And you could actually steal very important information from an organization by doing this. So you have to make sure that, you know, just enough administration, not giving people more rights than they need. You have to be very careful, because likewise, Clint, I could very easily just go into the file system and I could delete this VM, and then this VM is not going to be very bootable anymore if I went into the file system and I deleted it. But I could go in here and I could add a folder. Let's say I wanted to add my typical host install folder. Now, the next time I powered on this VM, guess what's going to happen, Clint? I'm going to have my lovely host install folder in there. So it's kind of a handy way you can inject files inside of here, and you know, it's pretty neat from a management perspective. And then when we want to get rid of it, we can just detach it here. But this is universal. So I could actually take this VHDX file here. I could change my bootloaders inside of Windows, and I could actually boot this virtual machine up off of a VHDX file like this. Now, I'd have to have all the drivers for my hardware level and stuff like that. But I just think it's neat to actually see that in action, because not everybody will have had a chance to take a look at that. All right. So what are some of our new features that we have with Windows Server 2012? So Windows Server 2012, Clint, added the ability to allow us on SCSI disks, because Generation 1 virtual machines actually use IDE controllers. So on a SCSI disk, on a Gen 2 VM, we can actually take and we can do a hot resize, because this is something that's a pretty common administrative task, right? Like running yourself out of drive space. I would say that being an administrator in the field, this is probably one of the most common administrative things that we would have to, you know, typically deal with from a management perspective, is I have a data volume, file server, whatever it is, and it happens to be running low on disk space. So the online VHDX resize is something that came with 2012 R2. It's available in 2016 and is very handy, especially from, like I said, that operational perspective. So do you find that this was a big one, being able to actually do this with the machine not being powered off? I really like this feature set.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that you've been able to do on the VMware side of the fence for a long time. And, you know, typically that's what folks compare Hyper-V to, because, you know, just naturally VMware has much more market share than Hyper-V does. And it's growing here, especially in North America. But this specific capability is good, so I don't have to power off a virtual machine to add additional disk space to it.
Perfect. So I think maybe what we'll do is we'll actually grab one of our VMs inside of the demo environment here, and maybe we'll show that administrative task. So I can grab I've got a VM here that's my management console here, and I can just connect to this. Let me just go ahead and log in. And let's just view the way that things are set up here right now. And you know what? The reason that we're going through, as part of our operational training, some of the routine tasks that you'd go through, these are some of the often overlooked pieces that I find that we have to walk our customers through, Clint, is taking and going through like the extension of a virtual disk and just these basic management constructs that you have to go through for looking after a Hyper-V environment. So if we take a look at this particular node, I'm just going to actually do this a little bit of a different way. We can actually just do this with disk part. So I can use disk part. I can list my disk. And inside of here, I can see that this disk has been built as a 40 gig volume. Now, what I'm going to do is, just because this is a differencing disk, because it's part of my lab environment, I'm going to add another drive. I'm going to give it, let's say, 20 gigs in space. I'm going to take an online it, format it, make it available. And then we'll say that it's now nicely filled up. And then we'll go from there. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to see if we can hot add in here. So I'm going to come up to the settings on the actual virtual machine. These settings work the same, regardless if you're in Failover Cluster Manager or if you're in Hyper-V Manager. I can come to my SCSI controller. I'll add a hard disk. Remember, we still haven't powered off yet. Click Next, New Virtual Disk, Next. Can choose fixed size, dynamically expanding, or differencing. And maybe we'll just take a, we'll come back to these in a minute, but we have to make sure that we cover these ones here. Okay, Clint? So just remind me to come back and explain the difference between all of these. So we're going to choose a differencing, which is basically, for you VMware folks, is like a thin provision disk. And we're just going to call this management console D drive. I'm going to store it in the same spot here. And we're going to give this 20 gigs in size. Actually, you know what, Clint? We're going to give this 87 gigs in size. Greatest hockey player that ever lived, Sidney Crosby.
The greatest hockey player. And he has a Pittsburgh Penguin.
Maybe not the greatest ever, but he's one of my favorites for sure. There's a lot of really good hockey players out there. So now I'll go ahead and hit apply. I will hit OK. Come back in here, disk part, inside of my VM, and we can now see that that drive has now been presented for us. Now we could run disk part, and I can online and format the drives, but not everybody's going to be familiar with disk part. So we'll jump out to the actual GUI-based management tool, which is disk management. Can online the drive, initialize the drive, format it as either MBR or GPT, problem. And we'll go ahead and we'll create a new volume. Next, finish, D drive. And let's say that all of a sudden this drive is full. Now, do you want me to show you a neat little trick here, okay, Clint? This is a great way to take and fill up somebody's SAN, okay? So if you guys are watching this, you may want to either mute or just look away, because this can horrify some people when they see how easy it is to actually fill up a volume. So I've got 87 gigs in space here, right, Clint?
Mm-hmm.
I want to show you something. There's a little utility. Have you ever used a utility called FSUtil before?
Yes, I have.
So FSUtil is a very interesting little utility in my mind, because I used to use it for creating hard links where I could take and I could have two pointers to the same file. But one of the things that you can do is you can actually create a file with FSUtil, and you can give it a specific file size. So if you go FSUtil space file, and then you just do a slash question, then what you can do is say create new, right? And then you have to specify the actual path and the length. So I think we created that as the D drive, right? So we're going to create that as D drive, and this file is going to be called badguyfile.txt, right? And we're going to give it a size, and this size is in bytes. So we're just going to create the first file as 1,000. We're just going to see what happens, okay? And, oh, okay, look, I've got the file bad guy file that's now created on here. And I go to my box, and I go to my D drive, and I can see that, you know, I've got a 1 kilobyte file, okay? So me knowing a little bit about what we do, let's go create a new file called bad guy file 1. Now how big is that file, Clint? Now I've got a 10 kilobyte file. So I'll just go ahead and add some more zeros in there. And I'm pretty sure you get where I'm going with this. Oh, not enough space. Do-do-do-do-do. Oh, now all of a sudden I have a 10 gig file that we just created. Well, how big was that volume, Clint? That was 70 gigs, right? 77 gigs? So what happens if I go like this? Bad guy file 3, What do you think this does for my dynamically expanding virtual hard disk that we just created, my thin provisioned volume?
Blows it up. Blows it up.
It's a great way to take and have a little bit of fun with your SAN. Oh, knock, knock, knock. Who's home? All right, so we have 5 gigs left there. So I'll go 5, 8, 4. Oops, I always forget to add this in here. This just absolutely blows some people's mind when they see, oh, look, time for me to come see you. Knock, knock, knock. It's your SAN vendor. Are you out of space? I can sell you more drives. So anyways, Clint, we're out of space. Now what are we going to do? Is this a pretty typical problem that you'd see? So, you know, this is maybe your production file server, or maybe this is your Exchange server, and things are looking red on everybody's mapped and shared drives, and that's probably not very good, right? So we want to extend this. We want to expand this. And actually, I've never actually showed Clint that demo before, so I hope you like that. And so now what we're going to do is we're going to actually take this drive that we just created, and all we have to do is go into Hyper-V settings, edit the drive, click Next. Expand is an option inside of here, right? So we can expand. And let's say we want to give this 99, right? Good old Wayne Gretzky. Click Next, click Apply, click OK. But I'm refreshing here, Clint. It's not giving me back any space. What's wrong? What did I do wrong here?
You need to rescan the bus.
I do need to rescan. So I have to come back into Disk Management, rescan. We'll see the black space show up here, which is our unallocated space. Simply just right-click on that volume now, extend volume, next, 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 finish exercise, and voila, hot expanding drives inside of your Hyper-V environment. Now, you should probably go clean up all the stuff that we just did there, so we'll go ahead and we'll delete that, all those files, and we're good. This is a thin provision volume, right? So, you know, I created that, and like, what does it mean when you have a thin provision volume? Let's actually take a look at that for just 1 sec here, Clint, okay? So if I go browse out to the disk subsystem here, and I come into where that management disk was stored, how big is this particular drive?
It's going to think it's the full size that you had provisioned, even though it's thin provisioned, right? It tricks the operating system into thinking that it's, you know, a fixed disk size, but really it's under allocating on the disk inside of the Hyper-V constructs itself.
Actually,
right?
That's interesting. 2016 zero those bytes out automatically and shrink it down?
Well, there's actually disk reclaim, I believe.
It did. Check this out. So let's go recreate that giant file again and let's see what it does to the subsystem underneath. Because that's not like that in 2012 R2 for sure.
Right.
So we'll create that 77 gig file. Come back to the file system again, which is going to be... So there we can see that that's been created there. Refresh here. Why is that not growing? Oh, I might have... Did I turn dedupe on this volume? No. I gotta check into that, Clint. Why is that not growing in size on us? Maybe it sees it as zeroed out pointers on the actual drive itself. Do you know why that's not growing? Normally that would just balloon right up to.
I was looking in Internet Explorer and I was looking up something.
Have I found a new feature? My demo was normally pretty straightforward. I just show the file system just completely blowing up underneath the covers. So it's a pretty simple demo because once you expand that out, it doesn't normally actually shrink down. So it actually raises a very interesting point. What if you want to shrink a volume? Can you hot shrink a volume inside of Hyper-V? So if I edit this and I come back into here again, the only option is expand. So you see that option there for expand, Clint? So what happens if I go to actually remove this drive? So let's actually get rid of this drive. So let's remove him. Apply. Okay. The drive disappears here from my console, right? So that's expected. correct? And then I take and I come back into my Hyper-V manager and I go edit virtual disk. I click next. I browse for the virtual disk, which is on my D drive. I go grab that management virtual disk again. Click next. Oh, and look, there's actually a shrink option in here. Have you ever run into a situation before, Clint, where you over-provision something and now you want to bring it back? How easy is this to do on your SAN? This isn't very, very easy. So I can go ahead and I can click next.
Nobody ever wants to give disk space back. They just want to take disk space.
Yeah, so what's the rule
of virtual machine?
What's the rule of thumb here? So how far backwards can we shrink this here? So it's only going to let me go.
And shrink it past what's provisioned, so it's actually being written to disk. So if I had, say, for instance, a 40 gig dynamically expanding virtual hard disk, and I'm using 20 gig of that already, I can't shrink it down to, say, for instance, 10 gig. The smallest you could go is 20 gig, but then you'd be out of space.
So I want
to be leaving a buffer in there.
Exactly. So I'm going to go back into this virtual machine here, and I want to just quickly show you something here. So if I take my SCSI controller, I come to hard drive, I add the hard drive again, I browse, go out, and I add this. I'm going to show you what actually needs to be done inside of the VM itself in order to shrink this backwards. Because expanding is one way, shrinking is going back the other way. Apply, okay, go back to my virtual machine here. Got my volume here, right? And the problem is I've got this giant file, whatever. Let's get rid of this. Let's say that we've completely cleaned up the hard drive, right? So now watch what happens when I go into disk management here. Inside of disk management, Clint, I can actually right-click on this volume now and see how there is 1 gig unallocated. So did you see how the Hyper-V UI actually matched what this setting was? So there was 100 gigs available of disk space, and it said, oh, you can only take back 1 gig, right? Does that make sense? So what I have to do is I have to mount this VHD file here, right-click, say shrink volume. Now I can take and I can walk this backwards, right? And I can say, okay, enter the amount of space that you want to shrink in megabytes. So this is going to be the total size of the disk. So I don't want to take it back that far. Let's say that we want to take this back 50. Okay, so I want to shrink this halfway in size. So I say shrink. Now do you see how I have 49 and 49, right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to detach that because you can't hot shrink. Okay, we understand that. So I come back into settings and I want to remove this. And now when we remove this, that drive is going to disappear, and that's perfectly expected, right? I'm going to come back into the Hyper-V Manager UI, edit disk, next. Find the disk that you want to manage, D drive, VMs, management console, next, shrink the disk. Now it's saying that the minimum is 51. So you see how those settings actually match up in there? So I've found that some of my customers, and when I'm doing the operational training, they're wondering why you can't actually claim your disk space back. That's because this disk space right here that's showing is basically that blob of free space. So you have your actual partition here, like your C drive or your D drive, and then you have that second blank unallocated space. So you can only ever claim back what's sitting as unallocated. If it's used disk space inside of there, you can't reclaim it. Okay, so just kind of a neat little kind of operational trick, I suppose, right? So I go ahead and I click next, finish. And so now that drive should be about 49 gigs in size, correct? So if I come back into settings and I add my virtual hard disk inside of here back in, and I go ahead and I add, and I browse, and I go back to my D drive. PC build, oops, wrong one. VMs. Come back over to my virtual machine. There you go. Kind of makes sense. Okay, so we covered hot adding and shrinking of virtual machines. Let's talk next about why don't we talk about moving a virtual machine and what some of our options are to move a virtual machine. So let's say that we just wanted to do some general maintenance tasks around, you know, creation and moving a VM. So first of all, I'm going to actually take and create a new VM here, okay? So I'm going to create a new virtual machine.
Control V. You just move it, right? Control C, Control V.
Exactly, but we'll create the VM first, all right? So we're going to call this VM here. We're going to call this Clint Move Test, okay? And we're going to store this virtual machine. I've got a D drive. And we're just going to create a new subfolder in the D drive for us to store all of your stuff, okay? So we're going to call this folder Clint, Clint's Lab, okay? I shouldn't just call it Clint Lab. And then we'll have another one in here that's going to be my lab, okay? So we'll call it Dave Lab. Right? Make sense? And so what we'll do is we'll store that in D drive, Clint Lab. Next, generation two, and this is basically a next finish, guys. I don't really care about any of these settings inside of here. It's going to go ahead and create a virtual hard disk, install an operating system later, finish. And so this particular virtual machine, now that it's created, if I come in here and I check the file structure around the VM that we had just created, we can see that there's a virtual machines folder, which has a couple of files inside of here, which are going to be our VMCX, and this is the actual XML file in previous versions that is used for the configuration of Hyper-V. And the other one is the file folder, and this would be used if we have any like snapshots and stuff like that. That's their actual default storage location. So can we actually open this VMCX file up with Notepad or something and view it, Clint? Is this actually a viewable file? That looks...
You can see there, it's just going to be a bunch of gibberish.
Yeah, that looks a little bit different than the XML file that we would typically see for 2012 R2, right? So you can't really do the same direct edits that you could to the XML files you could in 2012 R2. Like in 2012 R2, it's just a plain XML file. And you can actually edit it. You can change like drive space or memory or processors or whatever, not with the new format. Right, so that's kind of worth pointing out. So depending on what version you guys are working on. And the second thing that I want to show here is, do you see how these VMCX files and everything are living inside of this folder? So what I'm going to do here is just show virtual hard disk. So that's your C drive that we would have created. And if I were to go to turn this on, and I go back to my file structure here, and I come back to Clint Move Test, Virtual Machines, to see how the actual page file has now kicked in. It's got like 1 gig here, right? And so if I turn that off, that's going to go away. Kind of makes sense, right? So now what we're going to do is we're going to take and we're just going to shut this thing down. We'll turn it off. And let's just copy our actual VM. And so this is where I talk to people in my training classes, and where when we teach that if you can control C, control V, you can manage Hyper-V, right, Clint? So if I copy that as a backup, right? So now that's a backup of that particular VM. I want to show you what happens when you actually delete a VM from Hyper-V. So I click on delete here, and I delete that VM from Hyper-V. I come back into the folder structure of your VM, and I click on virtual hard disks, your VHD is still there, right, Clint? We actually didn't delete the files when you're in Hyper-V Manager, correct? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't actually delete anything there, but I come into virtual machines, the actual virtual machine itself, the folder itself is empty. So let's say I wanted to bring this virtual machine back into Hyper-V. It's just a folder structure, right, Clint? So I have a backup of it here just to show you guys the difference. See how I have the XML files inside of here and the VMCX files? So if I went to come into Hyper-V Manager and say import virtual machine, next, look for the folder, D drive, Clint Lab, browse, find your folder for your virtual machine, next, no virtual machines found. Come back here, browse again, browse to the copied one, all of a sudden I see your virtual machine inside of there. So what's the important point here, Clint, is whenever you're looking to export virtual machines in like a raw copy and paste format, never ever delete the virtual machine, because you delete the corresponding configuration files and you can't re-import them in. So we can re-register, and there's differences between these options here too, between register, re-register, and copy. If I click copy, it'll actually just create a copy of the actual virtual machine itself. If I restore the virtual machine to use the unique ID, so those actually have different settings. You can only have one virtual machine with the same unique ID on the same Hyper-V hypervisor. So I click next, finish, and voila, there, your Clint move test is back. You're okay, right? We're back in business. So let's go ahead and let's go back to the file system here. And inside of the file system, let's just go ahead and take another copy of this just so that we have another copy. So that would be kind of the preferred method, right? We want to just have the VM turned off, and we just want to copy it, right? So we're going to call this like your backup copy or whatever, right? So now I could take your virtual machine, however big it is, and I could copy this over to another folder, right? So let's say we wanted to change the working folder of the virtual machine around. So what I could do is I could, in theory, delete this virtual machine. Now remember, this is going to cause me a problem. Because if I delete this, watch what happens to the source. So if I come back into your Clint lab, this was where it was living. Uh-oh. This is such a common mistake that people make, Clint, when they're moving stuff around. If you delete the VM, guys, when you're if you're watching this, if you delete the VM, you delete the VMX files. You delete the XML files in 2012R2. So be careful deleting stuff, because once you delete it, the only thing that you're left with is you're left with a virtual hard disk. Okay, that's it. That's all you're left with. And at that point in time, once I'm only left with a virtual hard disk, what's the only way to fix this, Clint?
Create a new VM and it just attached straight to the hard disk.
Exactly. So I would have to create a new VM. I could call this Clint New. I could browse out to the D drive, right? Oops. Browse out to the D drive. Choose my path. Say we're going to put it back in your Clint copy. We'll just put it inside of there, whatever, blah, 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 blah. And then what we're going to do here is we're going to say use an existing virtual hard drive. Now, what's one of the downfalls of this? Will the network configurations be retained with this, or are you going to have like a brand new network adapter showing up in Windows? You're going to have
a brand new adapter and all that, yeah.
Yeah, so if you had IP configuration.
The machine shell, you're losing all of that. You're losing that entire configuration of that virtual machine.
Yeah. Now remember, there's no OS in here, so you're just going to see basically a BIOS prompt, which is what we expect because it's just a shell VM. But at the end of the day, this is basically going to take and boot back into Windows, but it would be treated as a machine. The only thing that's really different inside of here would be any of these settings here. So you'd have memory, processor, you'd have network adapter settings, and any of the other settings in here. All of that's lost if you delete that VM, right? Now, the cool part about this, though, Clint, is let's say I want to take and just manually move the virtual machines around. Let's say I've got my Dave Lab folder here, but I actually want to take my Dave Lab folder and I want to actually spin up this VM on the other Hyper-V server that I've got. So I've got TCHQ VS02, and I don't know what I had provisioned for drive space in there. So we'll try a D drive. I do have a D drive. Okay, and so we'll copy over my lab. So now I actually have that Clint test VM over here, right? So I can come over to the second Hyper-V server, and now I can click on import, right? I click on my import. Can I not import? Can you not import remotely? Am I going crazy here? Well, I guess you can't. I guess you can't import remotely. I'll have to RDP over to there. Okay, just give me a sec, guys. Can't honestly say that I've tried that before, like not actually on the console. TCHQ VS02. Give me 1 second. I think we've got about probably, 15 or so minutes left here, Clint. And let's open up Hyper-V Manager. So now basically what we've done is we copied this virtual machine over to the new target Hyper-V server. We go ahead and click next. Sorry about the screen resolution here, guys. It's not super important, but Dave Lab, move test, next, Next. Oh, look, we found your VM, Clint. Register. Next. And finish. So basically, if as long as on your source Hyper-V host server, you don't actually delete the VM, moving around VMs the manual way is basically as simple, Clint, as taking and just copying and pasting the working folder. You just have to make sure that you have the control files in there, right? Anything that you'd like to add before we kind of move on to some live migration pieces?
No, I think we covered everything there. Yeah, that should be good.
Okay, perfect. So the next one
I can think of off the top of my head.
Awesome. Okay, so the next one that we're going to take a look at here is managing your storage. Oftentimes, you're going to change SAN vendors in the life of a data center, right? So you might be with SAN vendor A today. Maybe your SAN vendor's on HP3 PAR, for example. And let's say that you wanted to migrate everything over to, you know, your brand new infrastructure you just bought. Maybe you did your own storage spaces direct cluster from Microsoft. You wanted to move around the VMs, but you didn't want to impact the fact that your VMs were actually running, right? Let me just get back into my other hypervisor here. Okay, so you didn't want to impact the fact that you're actually, you know, running these things. So for example, in this lab that we've got here, Clint, let's just take a fictitious example here, because I don't know how many, I do have an E drive. Okay, so I have an E drive and I have a D drive. And let's just say that the E drive and the D drive are actually separate SANs. So let's say that the E drive on this particular box, for whatever reason, this is from my HP SAN, right? And let's say that the D drive is my HP SAN and the E drive is like my NetApp SAN. And I'm just randomly picking these out of the air here, guys. So no favoritism to any SAN vendors. So, and I want to move my actual files from my HP to my NetApp, but I don't want to take an outage in doing that. So if I did the copy and paste mechanism, the unfortunate reality is that you're going to take an outage, right? So what are some of my choices for actually moving these files around the subsystem? Does Hyper-V natively provide support for live migration of storage files? Is that actually possible?
Yeah, you can absolutely move the storage.
Okay, and is that a hard process to actually go through and do?
No, if you just go into Failover Cluster Manager there, you can right-click on it, or Hyper-V Manager there.
I think you can do it right from Hyper-V Manager here too, right? So I think you can just right-click on a VM. Let's say this is my domain controller that's running that entire lab environment that we were using in the last session. So this is a good example, because if I screw this up, this is going to probably hose my lab, and I'll have to like fail over to my other domain controller or something, right? So this is a pretty important VM, I think, in my lab environment. So we'll go ahead and we'll click move. And when I click move...
For the VMware guys, really quick, Dave, for the VMware guys out there, this would be equivalent to doing a storage vMotion, right? So if I have a VMFS or an NFS data store that is presented to my vSphere host, and I want to migrate or storage vMotion from one data store to another data store, essentially that's what we're doing here.
Yeah. And Microsoft's done a really good job over the years in actually mirroring a lot of this functionality, because storage live migration wasn't available for us in earlier versions of Hyper-V. So it started in 2012 R2 and is also available inside of 2016. So you can see I have the option to move the virtual machine. So I could actually move this particular virtual machine, right, Clint, from Hyper-V server 1 to 2, and the storage is not attached, like, or it's not shared. So this is what we call a shared nothing live migration. I can actually distinctly migrate between two different devices. And how I always explain this to people is that if I chose this option, I could actually migrate this particular VM to any other Hyper-V server. So if I happen to be running a developer laptop and I have a VM and I want to move it into the data center, I can actually take and I can use the shared nothing live migration, and I can move that virtual machine into the data center if I wanted to. And I would basically see one ping timeout loss that we would have as part of that process. In the same fashion, we can also move the storage. So seeing as we're talking storage in this session, let's go ahead and let's move the storage. So I'm going to say move the virtual machine storage. Go ahead and click next. And I can say, move all the virtual machine data to a single location, move the virtual machine data to different locations, or just move the hard drive. So I'm going to say, you know what, I want to move all of the virtual machine data. I want to have this entirely moved over from my D drive to my E drive, but I don't want to take that outage. And so just to prove that that we're not going to have any outages, let's actually take and let's log into this virtual machine here, Clint. And inside of this particular virtual machine, let's just start a ping so we can have something running on it. So we're going to ping localhost-t. So we've got something running. So if this times out, we're going to know, right? Because there's some activity happening inside the virtual machine right now itself. And so we're going to right-click on here. We're going to say move. We say move all the contents of the virtual machine and specify the location for the virtual machine's items. And so I'll say browse. And I said we're going to go to the E drive, right? And we're just going to call, we're going to create a new folder called VMs. So I'm going to move this to VMs. And click next. And click finish. And as soon as I do that, what's going to end up happening is that it's going to kind of lock me out of the UI here a little bit. But if I click into the background window, I can actually see that it's giving me a status. Now, this is really important in Hyper-V because I often see people that work on Hyper-V, they don't have enough real estate. And they leave stuff like this, right? And they don't understand that there's actually extra columns of information that are showing up under the covers. So make sure that you can see all your real estate, folks. This status option is important because we can actually see what's going on. And so what's happening now, if I go back and I check my virtual machine, we can see that we have not dropped any pings. So everything is still going as expected. I could actually bring this over here. And we'll bring back up Hyper-V Manager. Here, you see that I can see no screen real estate. Migrating my storage.
If you were logged into that Hyper-V host as well, you could open Disk here in Resource Manager.
Yeah.
And you could be able to see the activity of it moving from, you know, reads from one array and then writes to the other.
Yeah, for sure. We could probably see that right now because I should see some reads on the D drive and writes on the E drive, right? So if I go to my disk tab here, check my disk activity, and I can see that I've got some writes occurring here. So we can see that I've got some data VHDs. That looks like that's actually a pretty good size VHDs that are being written to. So this is my DC1. So this is the one that's actually moving to my E drive. There's the writes, right? And if I check my reads, there's my D drive. So that's a really good point, is that, you know, resource monitor is really your friend when you take a look at this. And so this is going to take a little while. It's going to complete. It's going to go as fast as we have for, you know, a backplane inside of the infrastructure. But that storage live migration, guys, oh my goodness, this is so handy, especially when you're transitioning. Like, for example, I got a lot of my customers trying to move workloads from 7,200 RPM SATA disk, they want to go to SAS drives because they're faster. They just bought this new, bigger, badder, faster. 2 years came around and, you know, they got a faster array. Well, you can actually transition all of this stuff with Storage Live Migration, fully supported via PowerShell. So we can take and write a PowerShell script to go rip through the entire environment. And this is a zero outage activity. So moving around the entire file system of this particular virtual machine, is there going to be an outage with this, Clint? Like, can the clients just do this during the day?
I can't. I mean, yeah.
All right. Well, that's kind of what I had for I think for the demos here, Clint. We'll do another session. I've got another session that we'll do for the actual live migration piece. And guys, do you see that I'm doing this inside of Hyper-V Manager right now? You can do that same move operation from Failover Cluster Manager as well. It really doesn't matter which one you do it from. So if I take a look at my Failover Cluster Manager, and I had a particular virtual machine that we had that was inside of here, I can actually click move, and I can move virtual machine storage. I just want to show you that the UI is slightly different inside of the UI is slightly different inside of the cluster. So you just have to make sure that you have your target path. And the only thing that doesn't work inside of here when you're doing it inside the cluster is if you have like ISOs. ISOs or things that are mounted to the DVD drive can't be moved. So those have to be skipped, so you have to just make sure you skip them. And this might show cluster storage volume 1, and I want to just move it to cluster storage volume 2. So it's a very similar process, works exactly the same way. The only sucky thing in here, Clint, is that there's no status inside of Failover Cluster Manager. So if you want to actually see the status of what's happening, you have to go back to Hyper-V Manager, and inside of Hyper-V Manager, you'll see moving storage. And this is the only spot where you're going to actually see it it completing. So it looks like it's almost done here, actually. It's at about, 92-ish percent there. We come back to the virtual machine, still have not even dropped a single ping inside of there. So what we'll do is we'll let this live the storage live migration finish, and then we'll probably end up wrapping up this session there. So that being said, Clint, any kind of final closing thoughts from a management operations administration perspective on what we covered for the disk add move change and just kind of the general operational stuff that you do with virtual machines?
Not necessarily. No, I think the one thing that's worth calling out is that within Server 2016 is you can now, if you go up there at the parent level of Hyper-V Manager and you right click, now have the option to connect to a remote server with alternate credentials, so you no longer have to log in with your domain admin, for instance, credentials, right? So you can connect and install Hyper-V Manager on your Windows 10 machine and connect into those remote installs. It's completely compatible across Server 2016, 2012 R2, so you can manage your mixed environment if they're not, if they're not part of a failover cluster, though.
Yeah.
Or even if they are, right, you can still kind of manage them through Hyper-V Manager, which is the way that I like to do it, unless I'm doing cluster-specific tasks.
No, exactly. And so we were able to demonstrate some hot adds, some extensions, some shrinking of your virtual hard disks. And these are topics that I find, Clint, that are maybe not covered all that often, right? Because everybody just goes for the big flashy features of Hyper-V. But when you look at having to drive and to be part of an operational team that supports Hyper-V on a daily basis, these little tasks that you have, these are the ones that are the ones that you find you're gonna really start digging into. So this is gonna finish up in a few minutes, folks. Hopefully you found this information useful, Clint. Once again, thank you so much for joining us on the session today. I think this was a good one. Had some kind of good demos that we were able to do here. I think we're on for one more session today. That's later on this afternoon, folks. If you're watching these, thank you very much. I know that a lot of you were busy today, couldn't quite make all the sessions. It's fine. They'll all be available in the shared OneDrive link as soon as I finish compiling them. So thanks, guys. Appreciate your time tuning in.